You are listening to an ADIS Journal podcast.
Hello, welcome to the podcast, Real World Perspectives on Switching Patients with MS from Anti-CD20 Therapy to Cladribine Tablets, or CLAD-T, from U.S.-based advanced practice providers. I am Kristen Kutz, a certified physician assistant specializing in neurology, working at Colorado Neurological Clinic in Colorado Springs.
Hi, I'm Courtney Roman, a certified nurse practitioner specializing in neurology at Rocky Mountain MS Clinic in Salt Lake City, Utah. Thanks for joining us for this discussion. To start, Kristen, can you give us an overview of multiple sclerosis, or MS, and its types?
Absolutely. MS is a chronic autoimmune disorder of the central nervous system characterized by inflammation, demyelination, and neurodegeneration, leading to physical and cognitive challenges. It varies in its course, with some patients experiencing an initial clinically isolated syndrome, or CIS, while others have relapsing remitting forms of MS. Over time, some progress to secondary progressive MS, or SPMS, which is marked by increasing neurodegeneration and disability, while others have primary progressive MS, or PPMS, from the onset.
Can you also walk us through the current treatment approaches to manage MS?
Of course. Conventionally, treatment approaches have aimed to manage symptoms, reduce relapses, and slow disease progression. These include first and second line disease modifying therapies, or DMTs. First line therapies are used either early or soon after diagnosis and are typically prescribed for patients with relapsing forms of MS or RMS and include traditional injectables such as interferons, for example, interferon B and glatiramer acetate, as well as oral DMTs such as dimethyl fumarate, teriflunomide, or saponamide. Second-line therapies are available for patients with more active disease or for those who have not responded adequately to first-line treatments. These may be broadly characterized as high-efficacy therapies, or HET, and include anti-CD20 monoclonal antibodies such as ocrelizumab or ofatumumab, natalizumab, alemtuzumab, and oral immune reconstitution therapies such as CLAD-T.
That makes sense. Increasingly, many patients with RRMS start on HETs as their initial or first-line treatment. The treatment selection may be personalized and guided by shared decision-making, or SDM, a process between the patient and healthcare providers, or HCPs. However, despite advances in MS treatment, several unmet needs still persist. What are some of the biggest challenges that remain?
As you correctly pointed, even with these therapies, many patients continue to have disability progression. Effective treatment options for progressive MS are still limited, particularly for non-active disease, which is characterized by the absence of any clinical relapses or radiological activity, yet with clinical progression independence of relapse activity. In addition, challenges affecting quality of life, such as fatigue, cognitive decline, and mobility issues, are commonly reported by patients with MS. Patients often report that their practical needs, including social and employment considerations, aren't always prioritized in their care plan.
Right. Another concern is addressing medication challenges, such as convenience of administration for infusions, optimizing dosing regimens for oral treatments, and reducing injection frequency for injectables. These can create barriers to adherence. During my practice, I've seen both healthcare providers and patients acknowledge treatment adherence challenges due to the complexity and side effects of treatments. Aging presents additional challenges, especially due to the overlapping symptoms between age-related and MS-related comorbidities, coupled with immunosenescence, which is the decrease in the number of immune cells such as naive T and B cells, and disruption of the pro- and anti-inflammatory balance.
Exactly. And although more than a dozen DMTs are available for RMS, treatment interruption and discontinuations remain common challenges.
Hey, Kristen, let's take a closer look at the anti-CD20 monoclonal antibody therapies. Can you elaborate on those?
Of course. Therapeutically targeting immune cells has been a successful strategy in MS. For example, B cells play a pivotal role in MS pathogenesis, driving the development of new strategies focused on B cell targets. This led to the development of anti-CD20 monoclonal antibody therapies, which target CD20 positive B cells, reducing inflammation and disease activity. Currently, we have 3 FDA-approved anti-CD20 DMTs. Ocrelizumab, indicated for patients with RMS, is the first approved drug for patients with PPMS. It is given as an intravenous or IV infusion starting with 2 300-milligram doses 2 weeks apart, followed by 600 milligrams every 6 months. Next, we have ofatumumab, which is a subcutaneous injection initially dosed at 20 milligrams at weeks 0, 1, and 2, then given monthly starting at week 4. Ublituximab is another IV option starting with 150-milligram dose, followed by 450 milligrams 2 weeks later, and then 450 milligrams every 24 weeks thereafter. Both ofatumumab and ublituximab are approved for patients with RMS, including CIS, RRMS, and active secondary progressive disease in adults. Both also offer convenient twice yearly or every 6 month subsequent dosing that may improve adherence in some patients who prefer less frequent healthcare visits. Additionally, the anti-CD20 DMTs have shown strong clinical outcomes in patients with MS, including high efficacy, reduced relapse rate, and reduced disability progression. However, common adverse events, or AEs, include infections and infusion-related reactions.
Yes. For example, in the OPERA 1 and 2 trials, among 1,656 patients with RRMS, ocrelizumab significantly reduced the annualized relapse rate, or ARR, by approximately 46% compared with interferon beta 1A, with relapse-free status in approximately 80% of patients over 96 weeks, and reduced the risk of 12-week confirmed disability progression by 40%. In the ORATORIO trial, among 732 patients with PPMS, ocrelizumab reduced the risk of 12-week confirmed disability progression by 24%. With sustained benefits observed over 6.5 years in the extension phase. In the OPERA 1 and 2 and ORATORIO studies, the most common adverse events with ocrelizumab were infections, which occurred in nearly 60% and 71% of patients, respectively, while infusion-related reactions occurred in 34% and 40% of patients, respectively. So what about rituximab? I know it's not FDA approved for MS, but it's still used off-label for some patients with MS.
That's right. Rituximab is used as an off-label option, and there is increasing evidence from studies that support the use of rituximab as a highly effective DMT with a low drug discontinuation rate and favorable safety profile in patients with MS.
Interesting. Now let's talk about CLAD-T, which works as an immune reconstitution therapy and is approved in the U.S. for the treatment of relapsing multiple sclerosis to include RRMS and active SPMS in adults. Kristen, can you walk us through the dosing and administration of CLAD-T?
Sure. CLAD-T provides durable disease control by its cytotoxic or depleting effects on pathological B and T lymphocytes through impairment of DNA synthesis, thereby selectively depleting lymphocytes. CLAD-T offers a manageable safety profile and minimal treatment burden, which can be attributed to its oral administration and reduced dosing frequency. CLAD-T is a 10 milligram tablet administered orally at a cumulative dose of 3.5 milligrams per kilogram and divided into 2 yearly treatment courses of 1.75 milligram per kilogram per treatment course. Each treatment is divided into 2 treatment cycles. The cycle dosage is administered as 1 or 2 tablets once daily over 4 or 5 consecutive days with no more than 2 tablets daily.
That's definitely a different approach compared to injection or infusion-based therapies. What do we know about efficacy?
The high efficacy of CLAD-T was demonstrated in the CLARITY trial, which was a 96-week randomized controlled trial in 1,326 patients with RRMS who received 3.5 milligram per kilogram of CLAD-T. Patients were 18 to 65 years old, and 66% were female. The results were impressive. CLAD-T significantly reduced the ARR by 58% compared to placebo, and 81% of patients experienced no relapses. It is important to note that CLARITY is the only pivotal safety and efficacy study that includes patients with MS up to 65 years of age, while the cutoff age was lower than 60 in pivotal trials of other approved DMT therapies, including ocrelizumab. Furthermore, the CLARITY extension study demonstrated the durability of CLAD-T's efficacy. Here, 98 patients with RRMS with a mean age of 41 years and 68% female who received CLAD-T 3.5 milligrams per kilogram in the original CLARITY trial were given placebo for 2 years. Remarkably, about 75% of these patients remained relapse-free at year 4.
CLAD-T was generally well tolerated, and most of the reported adverse events were mild to moderate, with a low risk of severe lymphopenia in these trials. Patients who experienced greater than or equal to grade 3 lymphopenia recovered to grade 0 to 1 by the end of the extension study, and there was no evidence of cumulative immunosuppression or increased malignancy risk with CLAD-T.
That's correct. Additionally, an age-stratified analysis with subgroups of patients aged 45 years or less, or greater than 45 years, confirmed that CLAD-T 3.5 milligrams per kilogram was efficacious in patients, regardless of age. Therefore, CLAD-T may be considered a viable treatment option for older patients with MS aged 50 years or older.
With multiple options like anti-CD20 and CLAD-T, when should HCPs consider switching therapies? MS treatment decisions are complex. What key recommendations should guide this process?
That's a great question. As per the American Academy of Neurology, or AAN, practice guidelines, it is recommended to consider switching when a patient experiences at least one relapse, two or more unequivocally new MRI-detected lesions, or increased disability over a one-year period despite being on a DMT, as these signs indicate that the current treatment may not be effectively controlling the disease. It is also essential to evaluate the degree of disease activity, treatment adherence, side effect profiles, and the mechanism of action of different DMTs when making the decision to switch.
Beyond disease activity, what other factors should be considered?
Tolerability and safety play a big role.
Oh, absolutely. Side effects, or AEs, are another major consideration. If a patient is struggling with AEs that negatively impact adherence, or if there are persistent laboratory abnormalities, switching to a better tolerated therapy is reasonable. It is recommended that clinicians should discuss switching to a DMT with lower risk of progressive multifocal leukoencephalopathy, or PML, with patients, especially with those who are or have become John Cunningham virus antibody positive, or JC virus antibody positive, with an index of greater than 0.9 while on therapy. This is especially important for patients receiving immunosuppressive therapies such as natalizumab, rituximab, or ocrelizumab, agents associated with increased risk of PML, particularly when there's a history of prior immunosuppressive treatment.
Additionally, both HCP judgment and patient preferences must be considered when considering a switch.
It's clear that multiple factors influence the decision to switch MS therapies, but how do these recommendations translate into real-world clinical practice? Have we gained any insights from HCPs who have already navigated this transition from anti-CD20 therapies to CLAD-T?
Yes, we conducted a real-world retrospective survey among HCPs in the U.S. with the aim of understanding the rationale or perception of HCPs based on their experience of switching their patients from an anti-CD20 therapy to CLAD-T. Additionally, we assessed whether the reasons to switch were comparable with age-stratified subgroups of patients aged 50 years or less or 50 years or older. Key endpoints of this study included most common reasons for transitioning patients from an anti-CD20 therapy to CLAD-T, the anti-CD20 therapy discontinuation, and adverse events while on anti-CD20 therapy and after transitioning to CLAD-T. A total of 407 neurology HCPs who treated patients with MS using an anti-CD20 therapy and transitioned them to CLAD-T were approached with a questionnaire via email to complete a de-identified electronic survey. Patient medical records were used to complete the questionnaire. The survey was closed after 100 eligible patient entries were received. The HCP to patient ratio was 1-to-1. The majority of survey respondents were MDs at 77%, nurse practitioners at 17%, DOs 3%, physician assistants 1%, and others 2%.
What were the demographics and disease characteristics of the patients?
The mean age of patients was 47 years. 70% were female and the majority were white at 67%. Approximately 69% of patients had RRMS, while 29% had SPMS, and only 2% had CIS. Among the age-stratified subgroups, 50 patients were aged less than 50 years of age, and 40 were aged 50 years or older.
Interesting. What was the treatment history of these patients?
Before transitioning to CLAD-T, 61% of patients were treated with ocrelizumab, 25% with rituximab, 13% with ofatumumab, and 1% with ublituximab. Prior to initiation of anti-CD20 therapy, 47% of patients had received DMTs.
Kristen, what were the common reasons influencing the switch from anti-CD20 therapy to CLAD-T, according to the survey?
HCPs reported that the most common reasons were perception of increased efficacy of CLAD-T on relapses in 55% of patients, and also the perception of increased disability progression in 54% of patients.
Well, that's interesting. Were there any other factors that contributed to this transition?
Yes. Perception of increased efficacy on MRI detected disease activity as reported by HCPs in 39% of patients. 33% switched due to a desire to avoid long-term immunosuppression with an anti-CD20 therapy. 22% switched as they preferred not being on a long-term and continuously administered DMT. 17% switched because they preferred a short course dosing of CLAD-T. 16% switched due to perception of fewer infections.
Interesting. In fact, approximately 87% of treatment switching may occur within 6 months after discontinuing a DMT. Given this, can you elaborate on common reasons and general clinical indicators for switching from anti-CD20 therapy to CLAD-T in clinical or community practice?
Sure. Some reasons might be suboptimal response to the initial DMT with a persistent relapse rate similar to pretreatment phase, ongoing MRI activity, or worsening of irreversible neurological disability, partial response to initial treatment, not meeting criteria for escalation to a second-line treatment, adverse events or tolerability issues that affect patient safety or quality of life, presence of PML that may affect compliance and necessitate consideration of a treatment switch, and lastly, older age at treatment start is also associated with increased risk of treatment switching.
So what factors specifically drove the decision to discontinue anti-CD20 therapy? What insights do we have from the survey regarding common reasons for discontinuation of anti-CD20 therapy?
According to the survey, HCPs reported that the most common reasons for discontinuing anti-CD20 therapies were relapses in 41% of patients and continued clinical activity in 26%. Other reasons included new or enlarging T2 lesions in 22% of patients, physical or cognitive decline disability progression in 21%, patient preferences in 14%, insurance coverage in 14%, patient fear of infection in 13%, opportunistic infections including PML in 12%, desire for different frequency or mode of administration in 10%, infusion or injection site reactions in 6%, and gadolinium-enhancing lesion in 6%. In addition to the reasons that we just discussed, there were other factors, including patient dissatisfaction with various treatment-related issues, such as injection fatigue, pain, or poor management of side effects, leading to reduced adherence or therapy discontinuation if these issues could not be improved. Some patients with MS find injectable therapies intolerable due to discomfort. In such cases, we should consider changing to non-injectable or less frequently injectable DMTs. Pregnancy is another event that requires immediate DMT interruption in women with MS. Lastly, patients in the secondary progressive phase of MS do not benefit significantly from any of the currently available DMTs, and therapy should be discontinued.
Since treatment tolerability in AEs were among the key factors in the decision-making process, what were the most common AEs experienced by patients with MS while on anti-CD20 therapy and after transitioning to CLAD-T, according to the survey?
That's an important consideration. Based upon survey results, the most reported adverse events while on anti-CD20 therapies were reduction in immunoglobulin levels reported by HCPs in 23% of patients, infusion reactions in 16%, and opportunistic infections, including herpes zoster, PML, or fungal infections in 15% of patients. The most common adverse events reported after switching to CLAD-T were headache in 24% of patients, nausea in 16%, and back pain in 8% of patients. Notably, adverse events suggestive of immunosuppression, such as reductions in immunoglobulin levels or opportunistic infections, were not reported in patients who had transitioned to CLAD-T. No new safety signals, infections, or immunoglobulin reductions were observed. Overall, the safety profile of CLAD-T was consistent with the previously reported safety data from randomized clinical trials and other real-world studies of CLAD-T.
Kristen, you mentioned earlier that the survey provides insights on age-stratified subgroups, those less than age 50, as well as those age 50 and older. What insights do we have on impact of age on the rationale for switching from anti-CD20 therapy to CLAD-T?
In patients aged 50 years or less, according to HCPs, the main reasons for switch from anti-CD20 therapies to CLAD-T were notably the perception of increased efficacy on relapses, seen in 60% of patients, and the perception of increased efficacy on disability progression in 58%, and on MRI activity in 42%, whereas in patients 50 years or older, the desire to avoid long-term immunosuppression was a key factor in choosing CLAD-T after anti-CD20 therapy, as noted in 45% of patients.
What were the common reasons for discontinuing anti-CD20 therapies among these subgroups?
In addition to the most common reasons for discontinuing anti-CD20 therapies discussed for the overall group, other common reasons observed by the HCPs in the subgroups, either 50 years or less or 50 years or greater, were infusion reactions at 8 and 5%, gadolinium-enhancing lesions at 6 and 8%, recurrent infections at 4 and 8%, and severe infections at 4 and 5%, respectively. Notably, a higher proportion of patients under 50 discontinue anti-CD20 therapies due to a fear of infections at 18 versus 8%, compared to those over age 50. In contrast, new or enlarging T2 lesions at 16 and 23%, and physical or cognitive disability progression at 14 and 23%, respectively, were more common reasons for discontinuation of anti-CD20 in patients over 50 years of age.
Are there any insights on AEs with respect to age subgroups?
Yes. According to HCPs, with anti-CD20 therapy, a higher proportion at 38% versus 16% of patients 50 years or older compared with patients less than 50 years of age experienced reduction in serum immunoglobulin levels, while both subgroups experienced opportunistic infections at 18 and 15% and infusion reactions at 16 and 20% respectively in comparable proportions.
Are there any additional studies supporting the transition from anti-CD20 therapies to CLAD-T or the findings of this retrospective survey?
Well, direct studies on transitioning from anti-CD20 therapies to CLAD-T are limited. However, a study by Daniel O'Neill and Suzanne Hodgkinson in 2020 conducted in a subgroup of 17 patients with MS who switched from anti-CD20 therapy to CLAD-T reported a lack of perceived efficacy with the anti-CD20 DMT, ocrelizumab, as the main reason to switch to CLAD-T in almost all patients. In this short-term efficacy and safety study, the effect on lymphocytes remained predictable despite the fact that CLAD-T was initiated at or around the lower limit of normal, and there were reported adverse events on CLAD-T that were comparable to those reported in other studies. Courtney, can you add any additional information?
Sure. At the 2022 European Committee for Treatment and Research in MS, ECTRIMS Congress, Dr. Donald Nagroski, a neurologist at Nagroski Neurology and a clinical assistant professor at the Florida State University College of Medicine, presented results of a real-world study in the U.S. We have 84 patients with relapsing MS aged 18 to 74 years. This study included 32 patients with MS who switched from high-efficacy infusion treatments and received greater than or equal to one dose of CLAD-T, and among these, 14 were transitioned from ocrelizumab to CLAD-T. Overall, the patients who switched from high-efficacy infusion treatments to CLAD-T showed a reduced annualized relapse rate and good tolerability to CLAD-T. The annualized relapse rate was reduced to 0.17 from 0.59 at year one. Approximately 9% of patients reported grade 0 lymphopenia, 6% reported grade 1 lymphopenia, 44% reported grade 2 lymphopenia, 41% reported grade 3 lymphopenia, and none reported grade 4 lymphopenia. The most common AEs occurring at a rate higher than 5% included fatigue, upper respiratory tract infections, urinary tract infections, and headache, as reported in the retrospective study. This study had a short follow-up, and results should be interpreted with caution and reviewed as preliminary. We have seen from the studies that transitioning from anti-CD20 therapy to CLAD-T can be beneficial. However, this process may come with uncertainties for both HCPs and patients. What are some of the key challenges associated with this switch?
That's a really important question. Before starting CLAD-T, several precautions should be taken. First, the absolute lymphocyte count should be within the normal range. Additionally, a baseline MRI scan taken within 3 months before starting treatment is recommended to establish a reference for monitoring disease activity. Patients should have antibodies against varicella zoster virus and the presence of active or latent infections such as tuberculosis, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, or HIV, and other contraindications such as pregnancy or renal impairment should be ruled out.
Well, that makes sense. Another challenge we often face is managing the transition between therapies. In general, immediate DMT transitions are often impractical, requiring immune reconstitution before starting the next therapy. Clinicians face challenges in managing the gap between treatments and determining the optimal washout period. Delaying CLAD-T initiation to allow immune recovery after discontinuing anti-CD20 therapies may create a window for disease reactivation.
That's correct. But on the other hand, starting CLAT too soon after anti-CD20 therapy, especially given the sustained B-cell depletion caused by anti-CD20 therapies, could lead to overlapping immunosuppressive effects, increasing the risk of infections and lymphopenia.
It's definitely a delicate balance. Are there any specific patient populations that require additional monitoring?
Yes, particularly patients with hypogammaglobulinemia. These patients should be closely monitored for signs and symptoms of infection, especially during the first few months of CLAD-T treatment.
Additionally, patient preferences and lifestyle considerations play a role in decision-making. Factors like insurance denials and pre-authorization requirements may also lead to treatment delays. Let's discuss some of these economic benefits associated from switching from anti-CD20 therapy to CLAD-T. In general, patients who switched to oral DMTs had the lowest all-cause total cost of care and MS-related healthcare expenses. With that said, healthcare utilization is reduced with CLAD-T compared with anti-CD20 therapies. One of the reasons is CLAD-T's unique dosing schedule, two treatment courses over 2 years, which minimizes the frequency of healthcare visits. Any further insights on this, Kristen?
Yes, you bring up a very good point. CLAD-T is an oral therapy, eliminating the need for infusion centers, which reduces direct healthcare costs, provides ease of administration, and avoids infusion-related adverse events. CLAD-T needs less monitoring post-initiation, thereby potentially reducing costs compared with anti-CD20 therapies.
To further support this, as per a recent study, the absolute cost for administration and monitoring per patient over the 10-year time horizon is lower for CLAD-T than with first-line anti-CD20 DMTs, such as ofatumumab and ocrelizumab. We've discussed the clinical and practical factors influencing treatment decisions, but another critical aspect is shared decision-making, or SDM. Kristen, how does SDM between HCPs and patients influence the transition between treatments?
SDM is essential in MS care. In MS, involving patients in treatment decisions improves patient satisfaction, adherence, and outcomes, and reduces treatment burden. What are your thoughts, Courtney?
Certainly, switching DMTs involves new routines, risks, and uncertainties, often causing emotional stress in patients due to fears of disease progression and lack of treatment effectiveness. Patient-centered decisions in SDM should address both initial and subsequent treatment choices.
Okay, let's wrap this up and review some take-home messages.
Well, this has been an insightful and engaging discussion. To summarize, HCPs have considered transitioning from anti-CD20 therapy to CLAD-T, with their decision primarily driven by CLAD-T's perceived effectiveness in reducing relapses and slowing disability progression. Additional factors included the desire to avoid long-term immunosuppression and a preference for the short dosing schedule of CLAD-T. In particular, for patients aged equal to or greater than 50 years, impacts on the immune system were key factors in the decision to discontinue current therapy and switch to CLAD-T.
Absolutely. And overall, healthcare providers regarded CLAD-T as a safe and effective option for patients with MS who were transitioning from anti-CD20 therapies. In the survey, more than 50% of HCPs reported perceived improvements in relapse control and disability progression as the most common reasons for initiating the switch to CLAD-T. No new safety signals, infections, or immunoglobulin reductions were observed, and adverse events suggestive of immunosuppression or opportunistic infections were not reported in patients who transitioned to CLAD-T. Thank you for listening to Courtney and I today. We really appreciate it.
You can listen to more podcasts by subscribing to ADIS Journal Podcasts with your preferred podcast provider or by visiting the journal website. For a full list of declarations, including funding and author disclosure statements and copyright information, please visit the article page on the journal website. The link to the article page can be found in the podcast description.